Dear Venerable Bhante, dear Venerable sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, we are going to start another session of question and answers. As usual, we'll start with the written questions. We'll invite Mr. Halakorn to present the questions.
First question, yesterday's, start with the last of this one. Bhante, why is it that in ancient times, Buddha's time, people were getting enlightened, so many people? It is as if a simple cough or a sneeze resulted in people getting enlightened. And yet today, in today's time, we are told it is rare. Why is that? And are there any enlightened people we know of today? Are there signs before it happens? What is it exactly?
Even during the time of the Buddha, that means 45 years, it has been reported in the early part of the work, a lot of enlightenment, and later, towards the latter part, it became less and less. And the answer given was, those who are fulfilled with their paramis and the those who are ready came quickly, and with one word or one simple teaching, they became enlightened. But later, even though Buddha used to give the long discourses and travel long distance, the amount reduces, and still it is continuing, and it's a general trend accepted in the Theravada tradition. But very difficult to give accounting how many and how it is happening. So even now, if you wish to see an enlightened being, do retreat, do practice under this residential retreat and go in front of a mirror, then you will see an enlightened person. So don't search enlightenment outside. Then so much of problems. And that is how the religion is happening. So whenever you are practicing, you try to see within. How much you are done away with your defilements. How much you are with the comfort zone. How much you are away from the stress and tension indicates that. These questions are developing tension, developing frustration, seeking enlightenment outside. The Jack Kornfield is a very famous character in America. He went to Thailand in 60s, and temporarily he became a monk. It was very rare at that time for white people to go there and get ordained. And he ordained in a so normal village temple, and later he was discouraged to see there is no meditation. Then he went to the master, and master recommended another forest master, namely Venerable Chancha. So when you go there, he accepted Venerable Achancha as an enlightened being, and he was very respectful. And while he is practicing, one day he saw Achancha smoking a cigar. Then he got really upset that can enlightened being smoke. And the second day when you go there, Achancha is sitting on a big chair and commanding and demanding the workers right around there, just like administrator. Then again, he got discouraged, and there onward no meditation. One day he went to the Achancha and told Bhante, I am about to disrobe. I am going to go back and I am discouraged. Then Achancha told, that is the way it is happening. So if you feel fit, do as you like. Then ultimately in the discussion told, I discourage because of you. Because I expected an arant and I came from the village temple. And now I have no hope, I am going to go there. Then Achancha mentioned, it's what a wonderful thing, because you are discouraged about me. Imagine if you are to think that I am an arant, you will never meditate, you will start worshipping me and going behind me and you will be a follower. Now you know I am not an enlightened being, so you have to try now you to be enlightened. So this is a very good example. Don't get discouraged, try hard. Then the Jack Kornfield is telling, to get that an answer, What a kind of a mentality, what a kind of maturity should Achancha possessed? And this is what I am searching. So he give up the idea of disrobing, practice under the same master. So as far as you search outside the Nibbana or enlightenment, it's an utter disappointment. The day you try to see within yourself, then you will be a yogi. Till that, no accumulation of experience happens. So therefore, please look within.
Dear Venerable Sir, during sitting meditation, I use the rising and falling breath of the abdomen as my primary object. Sometimes, when my breath is very calm, it feels like there are two breaths. The one I am following and then one that seems to be underneath or maybe in addition. It feels deeper and bigger, then it disappears and I continue watching the regular breath. Is this my imagination? Thank you for your comment.
Likewise, when you are observing any object, there are many facets, many paradigms. So sometimes you see the common characters among the breath, sometimes you find the individual characteristics on the individual breath, like that in one object. There are many facets. Keep on observing them. Don't categorize them as imagination or don't categorize them as reality. You have to understand you are progressing. Continue to do with the encouragement.
Bhante, it is with all due respect and humility that I ask you these questions. During walking meditation, my feet felt so rooted to the ground as if the heaviest of weights were pulling them into the ground. Meditation revealed the solidity of the earth element. I saw and felt a light gray concrete wall cemented to my face. Then the cement wall became a deep sea of red. Often, I see a large circular purple object directly in front of my view. Maybe I am becoming so relaxed in meditation that I am experiencing drowsiness. It could be the early schedule perhaps. My body often moves from side to side and back and forth. Should I allow my body to move or should I stop it? Also, so far during every sitting, my lips are being contorted every which way, making all sorts of odd contortions. I begin to suck in my lips as if I wanted to swallow them, especially the bottom lip. But I must say, all in all, my meditation is not as intense as usual. There is less fluidity. It actually feels stiffer. I am not experiencing as much phenomena. Thank you, Bhante.
The early part of the essay indicates some early signs on the concentration. So whenever you get accustomed and seasoned to the walking meditation, you feel the walking go beyond your control, like swaying, sometimes sleepiness. So these are some early signs. So you have to keep on continuing, and then you know how to see through them, how to go through it, and then only you get the mature experience in the walking meditation. So these are nothing to get discouraged, but to get encouraged and see. More and more you practice, you see different mental colorations and different attitudes of the body and different parts of the body respond in different ways. So just let them happen without any interference, whether it is your intended thing or whether it is happening to you. Never mind, your main concern must be the mindfulness. As far as the mindfulness is concerned, don't be judgmental. Everything is valid experience, so let the experience to be get accumulated.
Respected Bhante, day 6. I would like to report my sitting meditation experience for your valuable advice. I started my sitting meditation with the breath as my primary object. In this session, my mind went to quiet, calm space at the end of a long in-breath in a short period of time. This time, my body was relaxed and I was seeing the quiet, empty space. After some time, I realized that my mind is moving to other thoughts, events, and moving back to quiet space. Some of the events that I can remember are myself listening to someone else, light perceptions, thoughts on the past events, banners with Chinese letters, etc. Every time my mind moved back to the empty space without noting, but did not go back to the primary object. The transitions were smooth, but the overall session was so dramatic, moving back and forth from calm to thoughts and events. Time has passed very quickly.
So these are the changes being formed to space. And sometimes it appears like a consolidated, collapsed form. So that means objects, and sometimes complete emptiness. Mind is learning both. So therefore, when it is happening, it is a kind of a acclimatization or getting used to this situation. So if you have any choice, the space is better than the objects, or objects are better than choice, the space, then only you get involved and you are getting committed. So as far as there is no such a discrimination, it's a learning how to be indifferent, how to be equanimous, how to be unshaky, midst of all the different situations, different extremes. So therefore, it let the mind to take enough time and to get acclimatized so that you have a choiceless awareness whether there is an object or not, form or not forms. So this is a kind of a very rare thing happening. So you must not interfere. Let the mind to take its own time and get settled to be indifferent or be equanimous to this situation.
Venerable Bhante, as you said, I am rehearsing for my death. I also figured that out. I have a lot of questions. Question 1. Does the breathing really stop, or only the perception of breathing stops? 2. If breathing really stops, can the body live without oxygen? Will the body get cold? Will I be able to get up after the bell rings? You said that the true vipassana starts after this death phenomenon. I have no one else to ask these questions and no one else to talk about this with. That is why I need your help. If you know some literature or books on this experience, please let me know. Need help. P.S. I know these questions are asked by my rational mind, which may not be very rational indeed.
So when I'm translating the Venerable Pauksiado, he was his masters for the moment on the Samatha meditation. He was explaining the fourth jhana, fourth rupa jhana, and there he says, book says, at the fourth jhana, breath ceases to exist. And mind is completely away from the object. Object was the breath, in breath and out breath. Now it's completely ceases to exist. Mind is experiencing or about to experience the nothingness. And after explaining everything, he says, if you entertain doubts and if you about to check whether there is a breath or not, then the breath appears. If you are not entertaining doubts, if you have the full faith, then you experience something without the breath. That means the perceivable part of the breath ceases to exist. But the breath is existing below the threshold value. Just air movements are taking place without much of a roughness. So therefore, whenever the breath goes below the threshold level, you can't feel it, but your central nervous system and the central organs are only functioning. Your skin and the peripheral blood circulation reduces slowly, and life continuum centralizes. So at that time, the mind also only be aware that you cannot do inquiry. whenever you try to do inquiries, then again the gross breath starts, and therefore the paroxysmal is justifying this. If you entertain doubts, you are no more in the jhana, you are disturbed. At that time, thoughts and the breath can happen. But immediately you can come back to the jhana or absorbed state, and there you find no entertaining doubts, no breath, it's calm and quiet. So therefore it is a matter of perception. So below the perceivable level, there may be a lot of happening, but they are not related to defilements. They are nothing related to your meditation, because they are not purifying you or defiling you. Only the perception level, beyond the perception level, things become purified or defiled. So therefore, whenever it will go below the perception level, sanya nidanani pa pancha sankha, perceptions are the culprit for our prolific thinking. Whenever things go below the perception level, they are not object of meditation, they are not making any defilements, no purification can happen. So therefore, observe it again and again, see, the body knows its own knowledge. Whether your interference with the forced breathing or controlling breathing or monitoring breathing or not, life continuum is happening. You are a passive observer. You can understand, maybe as I am the doer, I am the executive, I am the householder, it is my breath, or you can let it happen. The breathing is taking, according to the cause and effect relationship, you can take a stand and observe it. So these all different viewpoints are valid in vipassana. Let everything happen, don't be judgmental, don't try to draw a conclusion, just keep on observing. It's very interesting.
Dear Venerable Bhante, yesterday my walking meditation was little better than earlier. Previously, I was lazy to do walking meditation, but now I have some motivation to do so. My walking path was about 150 feet. I did about an hour, determined to note without missing one step. I could score about 90%. When the thoughts arose, I was able to note it just as thought rather than indulging it. Once I saw a green caterpillar just rising its head from the ground. Then it disappeared from my awareness to note next step. It is quite interesting how I noted it in a split second, then disappeared. Your talk today, I think my greed likes caught details of caterpillar, color, shape, rising head. But mindfulness prevented getting further details of it. Do you agree? If I am fully mindful, how would have I seen that caterpillar? How to progress from this stage to autopilot walking? My mind feels some tiredness of applying attention, manasikarya, again and again. Looking for your advice, wishing you good health.
So when and where are you mindful? Often it happens in the walking meditation, the mind jump from your leg to the seeing objects and kind of thing. When and where the mindfulness is strong, even the shifting happen, the secondary objects appear less and less colorful, less and less attractive. The term Buddha uses is virajyati. Whenever you look at object with lustful mind, a ranjati is very colorful, detail, you feel like go into the shapes, the colors and manners and everything. But when you are covered with the mindfulness before and after, object appears, but they are not very dramatic, colorful, and it's faded off. Viranjaneya in Singhala, Viranjaniya in English, when you apply chlorine and others to the cloth, its color disappeared. There's a one single term. bleaching. So that when the bleaching happens, your motivation reduces. You find difficult to apply your mind again and again, because everywhere you look at, it bleach off and its discoloration happen. So that is what's nibbindati virajyati virajyati vimuchyati. More and more you it is bleached, your attachment reduces. Still the object is there. So this clear indication, the attractive nature of the object disappears not due to the quality of the object, but due to your meditation. This is how your attachment to your dear and near ones, everything disappears. Not that they become disformed, not that they become ugly. They are, but your defilements are going off. So this is a very clear indication. When and where you become mindful, that is to say, before looking the object, you are mindful. After looking the object, if you are mindful, object appear bleached. Object appear discolored, and therefore the nature of going to details, everything disappears. So this is a very clear indication. You have the equanimous idea about all the objects. You have no specific desirability. You think everything is nothing but four elements. It takes different shapes and the colors, and nothing attractive. So this is a negative feature for the business world. Because business world is always for their advertising, marketing, and productivity and creativity. They want to see more and more attractive. That is, they are making more and more craving, more and more desire. When you are meditating, other way can happen. So it's a very good way of presenting it. When you continue further and further, if you have a negative feeling, you start hating that your sick mind. But instead, you have to understand, look this phenomena not through the hate base, but through the wisdom base, how the bleaching or discoloration happen due to your mindfulness and clear comprehension. And it is happening slowly, slowly. So the objects can't influence yourself. So I would say the remote, you can't now manipulate it by a remote controller. Now control come up to yourself. Whatever the object you see, attractive or distracted, your peace of mind will be there. It's at ultimatum, it says it's a magic of the Arahant mind. Even if you see a very putrefied thing, you can see Dhamma. Even if you see a very beautiful thing, you can see the trap of it. So therefore, whether it is intrinsically it is beautiful or ugly, the mind of an Arahant is not carried away. He can see beauty in the ugly thing and ugly in the beauty things. That is how we can separate. So these are the inception, these are the starting point of that. It is usually against the grain. So you have to be prepared and go, facilitate it. So then this situation continue. That means before any wandering, after any wandering, you will be get the assurance mindfulness is intact. So much so, in between object, never divide you.
Dear Venerable Bhante, one, whenever I sit down, unable to feel my breath and use my sitting posture here and now as my primary object, what is the beginning, middle and the end I should be observing? Or else, should I patiently wait until the breath emerges as it sometimes did? And shift my primary object from the sitting posture to be the breath itself. What if at certain point the breath can't be felt again? So do I shift my primary object back to the sitting position again? Two, can I use my observing mind itself as the primary object? I can feel the mind itself by directing the awareness to itself and then hold it here and now. Three, is it possible to have your daily Dhamma talk earlier so that immediately after it, we can either have a sitting or walking meditation session to ponder over it rather than the lunch.
So you can skip the lunch and keep on walking, keep on studying. No problem. And so therefore, now we are almost toward the end of the retreat. So we will consider this as for future arrangements, not for this retreat. And the early part, it says, when you are looking at an object, there are a lot of facets. My example is when you go to the beach, you can either see the breaking waves that are countable. You can see the beginning, the middle, and the end. But if you look at the horizon, no beginning, no middle, no end, from morning to evening, exactly the same. So both of them are two facets of the same ocean. If you look at the middle part of the ocean, it's a glare. Right? The waves are there, it is not breaking, and you can reflect the sunlight and appear like monotonous. So these are the different states. All of them are valid facets of the same mindfulness. So therefore, keep on continuing. Don't have a preference. If you have a preference, be aware. This is due to my preference or my choice. So everything is valid as far as it is within the light of mindfulness. Make sure it is not a hallucination. Make sure it is not a dream. Make sure it is not imagination. As far as it is not so, these all are valid. So it, everything comes under the noble quest. That means Arya Paryasana. So don't try to be, don't try to rush. They are just seasoning, getting custom. So therefore, without the discrimination, let all the facets to come in. And ultimately, the mind will know the least frictional path. Or the comfort zone, if you are not forking fingers with judgmental mind or decisive mind. This is the only culprit. Under such circumstances, natural unfolding is all valid.
Dear Venerable Bhante, sometimes I am terrified with your choice of words. Yesterday when I heard somebody questioning about killing mother and father, I am afraid somebody can quote your words without the context and give a completely distorted view of your talk and might say Buddhists are preaching to kill their parents to get liberation. I think you called Tanha as mother and Sankar as father. Please correct me. Please emphasize this again. Though we know Buddhists do not preach killing or doing any harm to even to enemies, and we do not kill even an insect like mosquito. Other people may know about this. As you know, mentally sick people too are I'm sorry. Coming to retreats and they are waiting for divine messages. If somebody pick your words as such a message, he might kill his parents to get liberation. Sorry.
So I think that liberation is always there, but I am quoting the Buddha. So therefore, I am not running at any risk. So I can give the quotation, not from the now by heart. So then you can complain against the Buddha. Then no problem. Then I also will come with you and will fight against Buddha. That I can't make sure about all the thing. If the particular person who is writing is not insane, no problem. No problem.
Dear Venerable Sir, I am here to report my experience with bodily pain last night. On the second day of this retreat, I reported that severe knee pain made me hard to focus, and as a result, I could not hold sitting posture for more than 10 minutes. After getting your advice on that, I started to detach myself from the pain during meditation and made progress. Now I can hold sitting posture for at least 20 minutes, despite the pain. Last night, the second, the second sitting meditation, my entire left leg started to experience severe pain. I detached myself from the pain, noting it just as a road sign and continuing to observe my breath. Then the pain got worse and worse. It just competed for my attention. So I took it as my second object and observed it for a while, then switched my focus back to breathing. I did this switching a few times, but the pain just kept getting worse and made it harder and harder for me to switch back to my primary object. It was like a battle. My heart was pounding. I was sweating while I was trying to win my focus back from the pain. I tried very hard and really want to win this battle. Unfortunately, the pain finally had me and I gave up after maybe 20 minutes. I was exhausted after this and it took me quite a while to get myself together. I am not sure whether I reacted in the right way. Any advice or suggestions will be greatly appreciated. This morning during sitting meditation, I did feel my left leg was less intensive.
The middle sitting, it indicates, it appear at the end of that, it's asking whether my reaction is correct or wrong. Any reaction is wrong. There's no reaction we can say good. So therefore, in the words used to express it, indicates, always you have considered the pain as an enemy. That's why you try to pull the attention from the pain to the primary object. So if the pain is prominent, if you can observe the pain one split second more than yesterday, it is an achievement. For that, your mindset must be, consider the pain as an object, not as enemy, not a hindrance, not a distraction for your primary object. So therefore, don't try to pull it back and see whether you can be with the friend, be with the pain, and just like another object of meditation. And day by day, it is slowly, slowly you become acquainted with the pain. There is a kind of advancement happening. But only thing is, if you consider it as an enemy, then your progress will be hindered. So therefore, not only the pain, thought or sounds, whatever distracting, whenever it happens, just see the immediate reaction to consider it as an enemy. That is natural. That is, you can't do away with that and bring as quickly as possible to the normal situation, whereby consider the pain and see the natural characteristics, whether it is stabbing kind of a pain, burning kind of pain, twisting kind of pain, one-pointed or accumulation, moving or stable, what kind of thing. That means you are studying. That means you are penetrating, and don't expect to win the game by overnight or one sitting. Daily make sure you are making use the incoming pain in order to develop the rapport with it, relationship with it. If it is increasing, that's all we can do for the moment. But this indicates you are too stern and you are really fighting with the pain. Therefore, the reaction is there. So therefore, don't react. Instead, take the pain as an object and try to see its natural characteristics, and when and where it is gone, you come back to the primary object is a separate story. So therefore, whenever there is no pain, you can understand under such circumstances how much you can keep the primary object face to face. And only the people, those who have given fair consideration on the pain, can appreciate when and where the body is not painful. So use it as a experiment rather than a battlefield.
Dear Venerable Sir, how does one deal with thoughts of sexual desire when they arise in your meditation? When it happened to me, I said, defilements, 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 and it went away, but only for a short time. Then the sexual desire arose again. Over and over, it disturbed my meditation. I have heard of a skeleton meditation where you see the desired object as a skeleton. Is this what I should do when these thoughts occur? Thank you for your guidance with this troubling problem.
It is not a simple thing. It is because very deep-rooted. When I started it at the age of 26 and working with it till 38 or so, this was my main issue. And being a young person, I hesitant to talk to someone also. But luckily there was one Dr. Parakram Fernando, and he was a dentist. And one day I went there and told Bande that when I started mindfulness, my sexual desire increases. Earlier it was not so virulent, but more and more you try to be mindful, all signals become amplified. So therefore I feel I am more insecure. Then he told, this is natural, because now your mind is more inward, not outside, it is inside. So they are happening. So therefore don't worry about that. You try, when and where possible, try to be mindful on your body or neutral object or in-breath and out-breath. Don't try to tackle the sexual desire as such. And it was not answering my question. And more and more you go to practice, I tried this asubha bhavana, repulsivity. But personally, it is not working in me. But anyway, some of the without clear guidance, what I did was, when and where possible, that means when and where these sexual and sensual feelings are not there, try to be mindful, and when and where you go to an object, observe very closely, note it immediately, knowing that if at all if it is to wander off, the sexual desire will come and invade me. So when and where you go to the object very penetrating, there you find kind of a security. Later I found a particular sutta, Agivachukata Sutta, whereby a king, Udeni, he found a very young, beautiful monk living in the monastery, and he is not an ardent Buddhist, and he found how come that such a young, prime age monk is very happy inside the monastery among the other elderly people, though no sexual life, and he just wanted to know because he has a big harem and he is full of luxury and sensuous life. So ultimately he went and got relationship with that particular monk. And one day he started a discussion and told Bhante, you are in your prime age, you are very beautiful, very attractive. And at my age, this, and I was so much carried away by the sexual feeling, what about you? He says, yes, yes, I also have a sexual feeling. And then my monk, the king was very happy because he get into the discussion. And then asked Bhante, how do you do when it is happening? He says, whenever I see a beautiful woman, say elderly woman, I consider she as a mother. If I see an equal, I consider as a sister. If I see very young, then I see consider them as my daughter. Then whenever this thing happens, the desire reduces. Then the king laughed sarcastically. He says, okay, Bhante, if it is working in you, it's well and good. But it is sex is not so easy. Even with your mother, it can happen. This is such a dirty thing. But I am very sorry to disturb you on this case. Then the monk came to know the king is not happy. Then he says, what I am telling is, if the sexual feeling is very mild and tiny, this is the technique. But if it is not so, there is another technique, Buddha taught us. Then the king sit down again and ask, what is that one? He says that whenever that simple, light, that kind of rational thinking is not going to work, give the attention to the repulsivity of your body, repulsivity of the attractive body. How do you do? You consider the head hair, body hair, the nail, the skin, and all the kind of thing. Then the king was not happy. He says, sarcastically he laughed and told, Bhante, the sexual feelings are such a thing, even you intercourse with corpse at the carnal ground. This is happening. So therefore, when the sexual feeling happens, nothing repulsive. Everything is beautiful. So therefore, if it is working in you, well and good. Thank you very much. But showed him that I am not happy and you're about to leave. Then the monk told, okay, this is for the medium kind of thing. And if it has the deep-rooted sexual feeling, or it's a sensuous pleasure or desire, then he says, if you guard your senses and always keep mindfulness, as and when the sexual feeling happens, sometimes you can manage. Now my mind is shifting from the secure domain to the insecure area, and then earlier the better, you can control it. Then King was completely amazed to hear, what do you mean? Then he was explaining, see the beginning part of the sex, beginning part of the desire. King was completely new for that. And then the king told that maybe that can work, because if I am to go to my harem unprepared, even though I go like a king, when I come back, I can't be like a king. I lose my senses when I go there. But if I go prepared to the harem with all the pompous and drum beating and all the kind of thing, I can go like a king and come back like a king, because I know I am going to the harem. So therefore, whenever the sexual or sensual or hate or sleepiness, if you can catch the early part, then you are better off. So therefore, it's a hardcore problem. So if you get a very light kind of thing by considering this rational thinking, you may manage. If you have already developed the repulsivity, and if you are acquainted with medium kind of feelings, you can do it with. But otherwise, mindfulness is the security. Because if it is happening again and again, you can see already arisen sex. And you sometimes you can see when it is arising. And more you go into that arising part, the earlier the better. If you are more diligent, you can catch all. Not to fertilize it, not to give food, but to go into a forest or sit under a tree or go to a solitude place. So therefore, you have the prevention is better than cure. You have to select your way of life. You have to select your activities. You have to select your way of talking, so that not promoting it, not giving into that kind of association, that kind of a places, that kind of food, that kind of talking and kind of thing. So it's a overall integrated thing. One has to work with it, because this is the single cause the Buddha mentioned, tanha. Tanha is the one creating the perpetuation of the sansaric suffering, and the sexuality is the maximum of it. So be prepared. But even then, the waves are happening. But you can see, sometimes you can have some strategies, war strategies, and win. And even sometimes you have to surrender into that, because it's a very, very deep-rooted emotion, deep-rooted situation. So work with it. Whether you are beaten with the sexual feeling or not, try to be mindful as much as possible. With the slogan that prevention is better than cure.
Most Venerable Bhante, I have been meditating for about 5 years now. The progress is very slow, but lately I am experiencing nothingness during the meditation. But it is not a comfortable experience. Gradually I felt a small movement in my chest area, and it also disappeared. But I can't stay there very long, because there is a kind of pain in the body. What should I do? Should I take the pain as my secondary object and deal with it? Theruvan Tharanai.
This is also almost like the early question we mentioned. At a time you feel the emptiness, at a time you feel pain or primary object or something existing. So your mind is now balancing between nothing and something. And as far as you are a lover of Rupa Loka, you happy with the something and you hate nothing. If you are a lover of Arupa Loka, you are happy with this nothing and you hate something. As far as you have this choice, you are beaten and you are disturbed and you are carried away. So therefore understand with respect to the nothingness, from the standpoint of the nothingness, something is relative. From the standpoint of the something, nothingness is relative. Let the mind to be unshaken either way, and that is the way out of this question. But there are some sentences in the this thing. You have certain phobias, you hate or you fear, you have allergic reactions. So be aware of that. These are very very tiny underlying tendencies or directed dispositions. Be aware of it. And next time when you go there, don't let them come and monitor or manipulate your situation. Let this nothingness or something to work in such a way. See their comparative nature and try to be unshaken by both of them. But anyway, you are better off. Now you are away from the sphere of the sensuality and sexuality. So therefore, your mentality is spiritual. But they're still learning Rupa Loka and Arupa Loka, or something and nothing. So let the mind to work out and sort out the way, unshaken by both.
Dear Venerable Bhante, I saw the beginning, middle and the end of my natural out-breath followed by my in-breath a few times during the early morning meditation session today. It brightened up when the event took place, but very quickly it became dimmed again. My awareness of my breath returned to be not as clear as sharp and as sharp. During the event, when I saw the totality of my breaths, I did not apply the concept of nama rupa paricheda, nor did I have the concept of dissolution. I simply watched it. All I felt was that at the end of my out-breath, it reached to a point that it couldn't go any further, and therefore it stopped and followed by the in-breath. My question now is, how should I practice? Will the rupa as being composed of the four elements and the nama as four aggregates, etc., manifest themselves gradually when my mindfulness gets ripened and matured someday? Or should I apply the doctrinal teachings together with my practice of mindfulness? In other words, should I integrate the doctrinal points into my practice of being just here and now?
This toward the end of the essay, it is considered in doctrinal aspects are much more valuable than the practice. Under such circumstances, you put the cart before the horse, then everything will get mixed up and complicated. So therefore, even if you understand the four elements one by one, that is to be get rid of. Even if you understand the mentality, feeling, perception, volition and conscious, that is to be get rid of. If there is nothing, it is already gotten rid of. Then why should you go and mingle with them? If it is an asset to be accumulated, that you must search. But if it is something to be get rid of, do away with that. Whenever there is nothing, you must understand the least frictional path, the comfort zone, and don't make the theoretical aspect or deductive thinking as a burden. So it's a crime, I mean, it's a canker, it's a cancer of the educational world. They do not know how to use the theory. And they think that even they enlighten, they have to bring again the materiality and mentality and understand them. That is not the real meaning of the doctrinal thing or deductive thinking. When and where minds falls calm and collected and peaceful and contented, facilitate as much as possible rather than going and scrutinizing the material part and mental part. I tried this in the morning, in the discussion, in the talk. Whenever mind is peaceful, calm and solitude, don't put theory, because as far as theoretical aspects are unsorted, mind never calm down. Once it is calmed down, you are well ahead of the theory, so therefore nothing to worry. See the ways and means, and see the way how you can facilitate, keep this peace of mind prolonged, keep this contentment prolonged, keep this solitude prolonged, then you will learn the art. Otherwise, if you are going to do experimenting with this theoretical understanding, the simple way of presenting is yes, that you are putting the cart before the horse.
Venerable sir, yesterday you mentioned about the attributes of Patavi, Apo, Tejo, Vayo. Could you please mention it again? Patavi has 3, Apo has 2, etc. Tejo question mark, Vayo question mark. Could you name them please? Teruvan Saranai.
So that please ask that particular person to send me an email. I will send the list. So we can go to the next question.
My simplistic understanding of rebirth is when a person is dying along with his last consciousness, some energy will flow into the zygote, thus completing the formation of a baby. If, however, there is no attachments, this energy will dissipate and there will be no rebirth. Please comment. Blessings of the Triple Gem.
I would like to do away with this kind of questions, because this is not a way to analyze our simplistic understanding. You have to understand mindfulness. So these are the questions I see it, screen them and bring the questions only pertaining to the basic instructions we have given. And otherwise we will go into all the kind of thing which is beyond our capacity, beyond our comprehension. We never arrive at decision. These are the questions much elder than the whole Theravada tradition. No answer. No theoretical answer. So therefore, we get together here not for that kind of thing. So if anything pertaining to your practice, we will take time, not otherwise. Please, sorry.
Dear Venerable Sir, as a beginner of walking meditation, I found that I had been switching between 2 different methods for the past 6 days. One is taking 2 steps for 1 whole breath, that is left foot for in-breath and right foot for out-breath. The other is taking 1 step for 1 whole breath. It seems my body reacts differently to these 2 methods. While I took 1 step for 1 whole breath, my hand radiated more heat. I had more pain spots over my body and I sweat more. I am not sure at this early stage of my meditation journey whether I should just stick to 1 method. Please practice and master it. I am humbly seeking your advice.
Thank you. The simple answer is please go back to the basic instructions. Their prescription is nothing concern of this breathing and stepping harmony. So there, please take time, and no harm if you are listening even number of times how to do walking meditation, and definitely it will help promote more straighten your understanding. Both the method you prescribe not mentioned in the basic instructions. That means you have not taken care or taken serious listening to it. Now if you are listening, definitely it will guide you.
Dear Bhante, thank you for your great teachings. Would you tell me one more time that what the person has in his mind when he asks a question? I got the first one, desire, the second one, conceit, but missed the third one. What was the third one on the list? Thank you again.
The egocentric thinking, the tanna, mana, ditti, So these are the basic things propel something. So whenever you are in such kind of thing, you can revert back to the source and see which one is propelling the question, the uncertainty or doubt. And whenever you look into that, you are not answering individual question, you are understanding the mechanism, how this uncertainty, how this question arises, that is very lasting, very, very introvert kind of a method. So these are the three criteria we can say, basically stir someone to keep on thinking, proliferating, questioning.
Dear Master, I was asking whether to observe the shining light or the sensation of touching point on the second day. I really appreciate your answer. When the shining light occurred again, I kept on focusing on the sensation. Then the shining light disappeared after a few seconds. I was able to gain continuous, more intense mindfulness on the primary object for about 3 hours. Even if I get up for a few minutes, I can continue to the process easily after I sit down. My whole body gets softer and softer. It is my first time to realize that if I put more awareness on the primary object, the mindfulness got wider and stronger. I tried a few times but did not put more effort on it. I want to ask, can I widen my mindfulness by putting more awareness on the primary object if it is possible? I am asking the question because of my desire or craving to get more efficient and powerful practice.
It is very number of times in the early question and answer sessions clearly distinctly indicate whatever the outcome, don't go by the outcome or byproduct. Try to be with your primary object as much as possible, then your experience will be cumulative. So you develop your own case history rather than following individual signs or byproduct. So adhere to the primary object, that is advisable.
Bhante, in regard to choiceless awareness, I am still practicing calmness meditation. It seems this body and mind doesn't care to switch to vipassana. Should I make more of an effort to incline my mind towards vipassana, or should I just allow it to be where it is? Gratefully yours.
So if you understand choiceless awareness, don't choose. Let the mind to practice. Let the mind to be mindful. The mindfulness will decide according to your personality traits, according to your habitual tendencies. So therefore, give the helm to the mindfulness. Don't try to decide. Don't try to manipulate. Mindfulness is a trustworthy, noble friend.
Yes, sir. I am a regular practitioner. A few months ago, I was listening to a Dhamma talk. I don't remember what I heard or who I was listening to. I suddenly, without effort, was experiencing sati. I was able to watch myself without effort for a few days. I knew what I was experiencing and really appreciated it. I did not, however, make any effort to cultivate or maintain the experience. And just as it appeared, it also disappeared. Even after practicing here for this many days, I have not reached that naturally occurring and effortless sati. I know better than to cling to that experience. But is there something you can suggest to make that occur skillfully so doesn't feel like an accident or outside my control? It is also referred to as the knower or watcher or stable observer. Yours truly and with metta.
Whenever it is happening, it indicates your potential. It indicates the possibility. So therefore, you develop kind of a desire to strive through. When you are striving, may or may not you reach at that level, but this is the early indication is a potential. the possibility. So take it as a positive sign. Keep on practice. One day you may not only reaching that, you may go beyond. So therefore, that understanding your own possibility and showing up your possibility, take it as a positive sign and as an encouragement, and then keep on practice.
Venerable Dhammajiva, can you clarify the difference between naming and labeling, and when it is and when it is and it is not appropriate to name and label? At the Dhamma talk on Nama Rupa, you said that the more you can name and discriminate, the better you will progress. Yesterday during question and answers, I think you said that whenever a new meditative experience happens, you tend to label it, which diminishes it. Are you saying that we should name and label our primary and secondary objects, but not our experiences? Thank you for your generous wisdom.
I try to paint the picture, but it would have not been well communicated. So I have the article given by Upandita Sayadaw, Naming, Labeling and Knowing. I hope that will give the very clear indication how to use this technique, when to use and when to not to use. Unless otherwise you have a fair amount of experience, you don't know when to use and when to not to use. Whether to use it for primary object or secondary object. Use for primary, secondary or not for the experience, these are not the good presentation. So please contact Halakon and I will pass him the article. It's about 2 pages, A4 papers. It will be really clearly indicating. I hope it will be contributive for this particular person.
Yes, sir, we are planning to make a list of all the articles and links that you have mentioned and forwarding into Reverend Rong so that she can pass it to everybody.
Then it will be too much of a problem. Reading everything and getting up, everything mess up.
So many people have
asked. Only give to the requested people for that particular disease, this particular medicine. If you give all over the counter all the medicine, iatrogenic effect. Problem due to medicine. Now whole world is full of iatrogenic due to this over-the-counter medicine. Dhamma also become valueless. So give it to the person who requires. Please ask, please consult him and he will give the relevant article.
Dear Venerable Bhante, in our day-to-day activities like brushing teeth, driving a car or any other family activity, we act like robots without mindfulness. But this is a great advantage we have because mind takes care of our monotonous job while we can do something else like daydreaming, listening to music or texting. Now, to improve our mindfulness, we started to walk and brush our teeth mindfully without doing any secondary activity. Then why are you asking to go to automatic mode? We see We already there, didn't we want to come out of that habit? In walking meditation, after some time, I felt like I am with the walk behind lawn mower, the machine moves, all I have to do is to keep a hand and guide a little when it moves out of the track and turn at the end of the lawn. Is this what you meant by automatic mode?
So automatic mode with mindfulness and without mindfulness is completely two different things. My simple request is, let it happen under the light of mindfulness. And without that, you are just a robot. Under the light of mindfulness, you gain the sap of the Dhamma, then and their experience. So let it happen under the light of mindfulness. That is the advice.
Dearest Bhante, 3 years ago, I was introduced to Vipassana and put on the path in a most unconventional way, worthy of a science fiction movie. I feel that it must be due to either my past lives or some unseen force of nature which pulls the strings and we are a bit like puppets. I am driven by some force which is greater than I. This same force enters my meditation, sits and pulls at my head and aligns my body. I don't understand it, but that's okay. As I know in my deepest knowingness that this force is helping me along the path, when I sit, I am observing, and this force, for lack of a correct word, is observing me. I am far from theoretical and truthfully don't get most of theory. I get so confused when hearing and reading the theory with 7 of this and 4 of that and 12 of this, etc., etc. I do, thankfully, make up for my unscholarly mind with intense experiential knowing. My doubt creeps in at this point. Can one become enlightened even if one is a dummy, so to speak? I have asked this question because in these past 3 years, which have been quite intense in the experiences I have had, I seem to be going in a circle. I have had things shown to me which have then been forgotten until they hit me once again. An example is the intense nothingness I experienced, which is indescribable. At first, for about 2 years, I was on an intense upward learning curve, but now I fear it is a circle I am stuck repeating over and over and over. I would also appreciate any advice you have for me to conquer a repeat feeling I have, fear. This fear is more intense than words can describe it, and it comes over me so very randomly with no evident or rational cause. The fact that I have not gone completely insane with the intensity of my experiences is a miracle. Thank you most graciously.
When and where you don't feel that kind of a deja vu or kind of a past power, so kind of thing, whenever you are not in the fear, make use the time to define and understand mindfulness. Mindfulness will guide you. All the others, whenever you are in the extreme situation, don't try to incorporate mindfulness. It is no good. Whenever you are in the normal mental situation, average mental situation, incorporate mindfulness, and that will teach you more than any theory. So therefore, believe the mindfulness, foster the mindfulness, fertilize mindfulness, feed the mindfulness, when and where you feel natural, and ultimately mindfulness will take the helm. Yeah. How many more questions?
Four.
Yeah.
Dear Bhante, what is wakefulness? What is the difference between wakefulness and mindfulness?
There are some people use this wakefulness also somewhat similar to the diligence and the vigilance and the mindfulness. So whatever may be, it is the opposite of sleepiness, sloth and torpor, and openness to the present moment. So whether whatever may be addressing you, mindfulness or wakefulness, try to be alert here and now. And some people use this wakefulness also as a synonym for the mindfulness.
Dear Master, two conceptual questions awaiting your clarification.
I am not here for the conceptual questions. So it's a mistake of Halakon. I told, discriminate these questions and give them and tell them, ask practical questions pertaining to our basic instructions. Otherwise, now already we have taken 10 minutes more. No.
Even though it is conceptual.
No, then please talk to the person with that and tell something related to the practice. I don't know, he's asking problem himself rather than rereading the question written.
No, sir, we didn't come to a conclusion about filtering questions.
Finish.
No, we didn't at the beginning.
Now, please tell me, do you have more questions?
Two more questions.
Please read. Please go there and read.
Dear Venerable Bhante, in North American culture, the words bullshit and bloody fool are considered as swearing or parusa vacha. But F words are generously used in any audience and nobody cares. May I respectfully suggest to avoid both types of words to keep our conversation noble?
So, of course, that if I have hurt you in your the cultural values, it is utterly my mistake. I apologize. But the thing is that I am not a North American person. English is not my basic language. You people are the people teaching me these words. So, it's, then just come out. So, please forgive and I will try to culture myself. Discipline myself as much as possible.
The last question for the day. Dear Venerable Sir, could you please explain how to apply Paticca Samuppada in ends of in-breath or ends of out-breath? Thank you so much.
It's also kind of a theoretical question, but for the last two talks, I try to see the beginning of the base, the starting point. That's a practical way of applying the Paticca Samuppada, that means cause and effect relationship. So practically, see the beginning of the in-breath or beginning of the out-breath or beginning of the rising mode, falling mode is the way of application. So please continue. Then later you will understand the relationship between the theory and the practice.
And the final question. When our concentration is on breath, do we still have to consider our primary object such as nostril, or just breath is our primary object? Two, during yesterday's Dharma talk, you mentioned gray area, by the way, in breath and out-breath. By the way, between in-breath and out-breath. Do you mean the moment after the out-breath? Do you mean the moment after the out-breath? Then what's the significance for the moment right after the in-breath? Greatly appreciate all your talks from your student.
Yeah, from changing from one posture to the other, changing from one object to the other, or in-breath to out-breath, out-breath to in-breath, in-between area always is gray. So whenever you develop the steadfast mindfulness, whenever time permits, focus into that, and then you can see. Under the light of mindfulness only, prepared mind, you can sometimes see. Maybe with acquaintance with that. So that is what I mean. And the early part is just a misunderstanding of the words. The breath has three facets, the touching point, difference between breath and out-breath, and I am in the hearing, pain or thought, but in the breath-like. So don't mingle with them, whatever may be, which aspect may be, which facet may be. If you are mindful, don't try to discriminate among them. Take the mindfulness domain, and whatever the facet is, it's okay. Okay, we have taken 15 minutes more, and anyway, we have come to the end of the list of questions. So, we have 45 minutes for walking meditation, and we'll be meeting here at 4 o'clock for another group sitting with that statement that we are going to sum up the today's question and answer session. Thank you very much for listening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.